The first case today is number 24-1592 and number 24-1716, United States versus Gustavo Kinross. At this time, would counsel for the appellant introduce herself on the record to begin?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Judith Meisner representing Dr. Gustavo Kinross. May I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal?
You may.
Thank you. Dr. Kinross had a private practice in Natick and affiliations with Mass General Hospital and Harvard Medical School. He provided a therapy called transcranial magnetic stimulation to treat major depressive disorders, also talk therapy and evaluation and management. He was convicted of wire fraud, false statements relating to healthcare matters, obstruction of investigation of a healthcare offense arising from billing insurance companies and Medicare for various treatment sessions that did not occur. The issues on appeal raise questions of the calculation of loss for both sentencing and restitution. Dr. Kinross received the GSR for his was as calculated by probation and adopted by the court was 168 to 210 months. He received a sentence of 99 months. One of the drivers of that sentence was the calculation of intended loss. And the PSR calculated intended loss as the amount billed, which were over $19 million.
Can I ask you a question? Did Dr. Kinross have contracts with the various insurers that
yes,
he billed?
He did.
And is there evidence of those the contracts that he had in the record?
Yes. In the government's supplemental appendix, which addressed the lawsuits that he brought subsequently.
You have the Blue Cross and Blue Shield contract.
You've got Blue Cross and you have the Optum Mass General.
Ms. Meisner, is that how this sentencing was styled up to the district court? So I understand the methodology here to be you start from a premise, I mean, I think we can agree this case was, quote, rife with fraud. So you start from a premise that the billing is the right amount, but then the burden falls to the defendant to offer up why that number doesn't reflect intended loss. And the argument here would be that, well, he knew that if he billed 1,000, his contract, let's just say, was for 800, so his intended loss was really only 800. He didn't balance bill. He didn't, like, that's your argument. Was that how this was styled up for the district court?
Yes, I believe it was styled up in that same general fashion, that the intended loss was the loss that he anticipated based on his relationships with the insurance companies.
Was it explained like Yoon was a different situation because in Yoon there were no real contracts.
No contracts.
And the doctor is just kind of saying, everybody knows if you bill 1,000, you're only going to get 800. And I had this sort of general idea, and we didn't accept that. What I thought might be different about your case is you actually might have concrete information that he really did have a way to expect it was only going to be 800.
You can look at Exhibit 48, which was his billing company's report to him, and it shows the fees that were submitted, and it shows the amounts that were paid, and it shows that in most instances, the amounts that were paid were less.
It's told to the court, and that's because he has a contract. It wasn't like willy-nilly. Maybe sometimes I'll do better. Maybe sometimes I'll do worse. No, the contract is you'll get X dollars.
I don't think that trial counsel specifically referenced the contracts, but did reference the billing and the receipts. And so
so what's problematic about that potentially, right, is that shows nothing more than, well, on these occasions, I didn't do as well as I hoped, which is different than intent. Intent would seem to be controlled by going into it. I had a reason to expect a lesser amount as opposed to, well, it didn't go that well this time, but maybe it'll go better the next time. And then it's hard to say that he didn't hope to get all that he asked for.
Well, but at sentencing, the civil suits were discussed. So even though they were not introduced.
Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Optum. And Blue Cross, Blue Shield had stopped payments for him entirely by that point.
In 2017.
So the restitution wasn't going to go to the Blue Cross Blue Shield.
No, well, the question was whether, if the question is whether he had contracts with these companies, these were reinstituted contracts. There's also an exhibit that shows his re-upping with Medicare, which shows that he had a contract with Medicare.
Does it show what the billing would be or the billing discount from?
It has attachments and references and refers you to other documents that contain that information.
So the district court used that civil lawsuit to say that he was suing for the total amount of the bill and that that was evidence of an intent to get that amount. Was it argued to them at sentencing that that was not his intent, or that if you, just following what my colleagues have already asked, was it argued specifically at sentencing that the court should take a look at Exhibit 48, which you said are the contracts, and that should be the specific amount used to determine the loss intent?
Now, Exhibit 48 was not a contract. Exhibit 48 was his billing services report to him showing the amounts that were submitted, which were his billing amounts for each case.
Did he have contracts with the insurers?
Yes.
Was that in the record?
It's in the record of the supplemental appendix and in showing where the contracts were attached to the civil suits, showing that he said in
was
his...
The whole record from the civil suit brought up at sentencing?
Yes. The civil suits, which were relied on by the court, included the Blue Cross Blue Shield contract, the Optum contract, and in his claims, he also stated that the companies were obligated to reimburse for covered medical services provided to members at the negotiated contract rates. So that information was also in front of the district court at the time of sentencing.
But not what those rates were.
No.
If you calculate loss, you need to know, okay, we have a contract and, you know, on these types of treatments, we're going to bill you $100 or we're going to cover you for $100. We don't have... Do we have any numerical value to associate with the contract?
You have the amounts that they actually paid, which would be the contract.
And so back to, I guess, my original question, was this argued under the Alphas framework to say, yes, the billings were this, but you should use the lesser amount that is reflected in his special arrangements with the, not special, but the contracted arrangements with the insurance companies? Because that's what he has to do to make that argument.
Well, I think that by arguing at sentencing that he was aware of the reimbursement rates and that he did not ever look for co-payments or look for anything other than what the insurance company was going to pay him, that supports the argument that it is.
It supports, but there are other arguments for that. You could say, which I think the government says, well, he just doesn't pursue those maybe because that would get the patient involved, and that's going to be problematic for the fraud because he's in Europe so he doesn't want to deal with that. So I'm just not going to ask for that money. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is no, he has a contract with the insurance company that doesn't permit balance billing, doesn't permit any of this, so he doesn't do it. And so what he intended to get was what his agreement with the insurance company was. And it seems to me the problem is, because you're not answering me like super directly, suggests to me this is a vague argument and the burden's on him because of how Alphas works.
Right, well, I will check the exact sentencing argument. But in terms of whether he was trying to avoid letting his patients know, patients receive explanation of benefits forms, and those show you what was billed.
Some of us read them and some of us don't, well, because it depends if we have to pay money for it.
Well, but he would not be avoiding the ability of patients to determine what he was billing for by not collecting copays.
He's incentivizing them to complain.
Excuse me?
He's de-incentivizing them not to complain when he says, don't worry about it. They're not going to call up the insurance company and say, my doctor ripped me off, because they have no personal financial stake if he's not billing them directly for any excess. So, I mean, that's the problem with that.
Well, that also just also shows that he is accepting what the insurance company is providing and is not looking for any additional reimbursement.
Your time is up, but you have time for rebuttal later.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the government please introduce herself on the record to begin?
Good morning. May it please the court, Alexia DeVincentis for the United States. As Your Honor's questions have alluded to, the relevant question here isn't what the contract set out. The relevant question is what this defendant subjectively intended, even if what he subjectively intended was unlikely to occur because of the contract rates. And on that point, the defendant
is what evidence was presented to show what the defendant subjectively intended. I mean, this seems to be an evidentiary issue.
Agreed, Judge Thompson. And on that key question, the defendant offered no probative evidence.
What does that mean? You just seemed to say the contracts were there. Did he say my expectation was the contract rates?
He didn't. The setting aside the arguments about not going after uncollected bills or charging for copays, which, as we argued in the brief and Judge Thompson has alluded to, really don't say anything about subjective intent. The sum total of the defendant's argument here was to allude to the fact that contracts existed without even putting all of the contracts into evidence, and stating that anyone would therefore expect just to get the contract rate.
That does make it different than you. So why wouldn't anyone expect to get the contract rate? I've signed a contract for a rate. And so that's what the insurance company is going to pay me. What's my intended loss for the insurance company? What my contract with the insurance company is? That doesn't seem so. To say anyone just means like, come on, it's a contract. That's what they pay.
And it may very well be the case that under an objective standard, that's what an objectively reasonable person might think. But critically, as the guidelines,
why would he have intended more than the contrary? What suggests that? That seems like counter-logical.
I mean, I think it's very much worth noting that the defendant never once attempted to connect his statement that anyone would expect this to his own subjective intent. Never once in the context of this sentencing. And I think that's very noteworthy, because whether the defendant refused to make an assertion even through counsel that that was his subjective intent because he didn't want to be precluded in the civil suits or because counsel couldn't in good faith make that assertion, The absence of even that assertion through counsel speaks very loudly, particularly in the context of a case in which the government had pointed out that, in fact, insurers did sometimes pay the full billed amount.
Is that
and given
within the contract rate?
We
is
don't.
There, is there any evidence that any insurance company ever paid more than what they were obligated to pay by contract?
Your Honor, I don't have the answer to the question, but the reason I don't have the answer to the question is because the defendant never put the reimbursement schedules into evidence. Yes, we have the reimbursement schedules from Blue Cross Blue Shield and from Optum that were attached to the civil complaints. They were otherwise entirely absent from the record. And so were the defendant.
How many other contracts were there with other insurance companies?
So I believe there were 5 private insurers and then Medicare. And I'll also note that the defendant in the addendum to the reply brief includes a handful of examples in which he was getting billing statements back from the medical billing company. But what he very conspicuously omits are the statements, are examples from Tufts and Aetna. And if you look at the record, particularly Appendix Volume 1 at page 80, it is replete with examples in which these companies were, in fact, paying the full billed amount. And so this wasn't just a handful of examples. The government gave a handful of examples, specifically noting that it was just a sample. But the record showed that this happened fairly frequently. And to my earlier point, the reason we don't know whether that was consistent with the contract amount is because the defendant didn't put that evidence into the record.
So you see it both as an evidentiary failure and a failure to establish his subjective intent.
Yes, I think ultimately the the question is what the defendant's subjective intent is, and the burden is on him to proffer evidence that would from which, you know, his subjective intent could be determined, and he failed to put forth the evidence from which one would need to from which one would make that inference.
You said the reimbursement rates for two companies was it's unclear because folks keep going back and forth between the civil case, but was the reimbursement rate placed in the sentencing record?
So in the sentencing record, the government had referred specifically to the fact of these complaints for reasons I'll return to momentarily. And attached to the complaints, which were Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Optum, the defendant had included the fee schedules, one from later, one from earlier, but he included two fee schedules. What was nowhere in the record, because the defendant didn't offer it, were fee schedules for these other companies. So
Medicare work, is that just public information that there are fee schedules that if you're going to sign up for Medicare, you are agreeing to?
For Medicare specifically, I'm not entirely certain the answer to that question. I think it's understood.
Some of the fraud here is Medicare or Medicaid?
Some of it, yes. Some portion of it. But again, there were five additional private insurers.
So you accept the premise, it seems like, that if, while it's rife with fraud and billing is the starting point, you accept the premise that if the proof is made that this defendant had contract rates and those govern what he should expect from insurance companies, that would be a proxy for intended loss?
No. In fact, I want to push back against that very notion, because I don't think that mere evidence, even of the defendant's knowledge of these rates, is synonymous with knowledge of is synonymous with subjective intent. And I think that's borne out in the case law.
Why?
Well, so specifically, if you take a look at the cases cited in the government's brief at page 17, Mirzoyan and Moran, and further, take a look at Singh, which is discussed in Mirzoyan and was cited by this court in Yoon. I think what those cases are suggesting is that something more than knowledge of contract rates is necessary. In Singh, for example, the defendant had testified about his intimate knowledge of billing practices, but the Second Circuit didn't say that on that basis, therefore, the proper measure was the reimbursement amount. What the Second Circuit did was remand for the defendant to show, quote, if he can, that he subjectively expected to receive something less. And similarly, in Mirzoyan, the defendant submitted an affidavit that said his knowledge plus his subjective intent. In Moran, the defendant submitted evidence of his knowledge plus projections.
I have a contract. That's the money that's rolling in from the insurance company. I'm not billing my patient for the balanced amount. What about this scenario suggests anything other than what seems kind of obvious? Like, that's my deal with the insurance companies, and so that's what I expect to get. Like, I just don't understand. Yes, maybe they should have put in an affidavit. Maybe that's right. But what would that affidavit have added? Why would I expect, if I have a deal for an 800 and I send a bill for 1,000, on what world do I expect to get 1,000?
Sometimes mistakes happen. Sometimes these companies are paying the full billed amount.
But we can't go by mistakes. We have to go by what the terms of the contract are.
Absolutely. But again, I think if you drill down on the case law on this point, I think it very strongly supports the idea that something more than the mere existence of these reimbursement rates happen. The question here, and this gets to...
Well, what do you think that something more is? Because you just said that in one case, they had the rates and the person's affidavit. And that was rejected. I mean, what more is the person supposed to do?
Well, the affidavit is just one example. And another example in Moran or in other cases within this district, there is evidence that the defendant sat down and looked at the rates and was projecting revenues based on those rates. I mean, there are plenty of options for a defendant to show that this is what he subjectively intended, and we reject the notion that mere existence of the rates is enough. But even if you assume that it is some evidence of a defendant's subjective intent, the district court nonetheless did not clearly err on this record, particularly given the fact that sometimes the full amounts were paid, and particularly given the defendant's statements in those civil suits.
The full amounts were paid only matters if it's in excess of the contract rate.
Sure, but it's the defendant's burden, and the defendant didn't carry that burden here. Yes. And so when you look at this as a whole, even assuming that the reimbursement rates could be some evidence, there's no way to find.
When you're saying the reimbursement rates here, what do you mean? Do you mean the Blue Cross Blue Shield contract and the Optum contract?
Well, no, the entirety. I mean, the defendant was challenging the entirety of the loss calculation insofar as it related to reimbursement. So I don't think it's enough just to say, well, here's Blue Cross Blue Shield, here's Optum. I mean, what about the other three private insurers and Medicare? That would be a failure proof, yes.
Just say that, well, those contracts aren't even here, so all you're doing is just saying I expected to get, you know, less than I billed, and that would be based on nothing. I mean, I follow that. But you're saying some contracts were here, some were not. You're also saying he didn't provide an affidavit, he should have, or something. And I guess, what's your view of the civil suit? I mean, to me, I'll tell you what I think, and then you tell me why I'm wrong. I would think when you're suing and saying, pay me the full amount, that's not saying anything about what you think the insurance company should have paid you under the contract. That's saying my suit is extra contract, and while I agreed to the lesser amount if they played nice with me, they didn't. So pay the full amount.
We would respectfully disagree. The defendant specifically stated, and actually, the defense wants to emphasize that these were pro se complaints, but in our view, that actually enhances the probative value of this evidence. These are not words filtered through an attorney. These are the defendant's words in which he described these claims as worth the full billed amount. And perhaps one could take that view of what these complaints suggest. But it's not clear error where the plausible inference goes the other way for the district court to draw that inference.
I mean, just one thing, but did he say the full bill amount, or did he say the full bill amount consistent with the contract?
So to be crystal clear on this point, pointing specifically to the Blue Cross Blue Shield complaint, he says that the claims total $15 million. He, a few paragraphs later in paragraph 19, then says the claims are worth $15 million. And then if you fast forward to the claim for damages, he says he's seeking breach of contract damages totaling $20 million, presumably starting from with the total billed amount. Otherwise, that's an extraordinary sum in consequential damages. But the most important part here is that the defendant himself, in his own words, described these claims as worth the billed amount. And unless the...
We have, there's just two ways to look at that, right? That either means...
Exactly. There are two ways to look at it, and when there are two plausible ways to look at it, it cannot be clear error for the district court to choose one of them. And unless the court has any further questions, including on the restitution, the government's content to rest on its brief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please reintroduce herself on the record? She has a two-minute rebuttal.
Judith Meisner for Dr. Kinross. Starting with the civil suits, even though the damages requested were more than the reimbursement rates, the suits, he did recognize that reimbursement was pursuant to provider agreements and that the companies were obligated to reimburse for covered medical services provided to the members at the negotiated contract rates. And in the record, the Medicare administrative contractor testified Medicare has a fee schedule for all its services. So there was evidence of Medicare's fee schedule.
Well, wait a minute. We have a fee schedule, and here it is, are two different things. Was the fee schedule in the record?
No, the fee schedule itself was not, but the fact that there was a fee schedule and that is so, and that he had a contract.
I can understand an argument where you say the court should have broken up the loss calculation into, or looked at the proof of loss calculation and looked at the items in the record from Blue Cross and Aetna, is that the other one?
Aetna was one.
Yeah. And then do a specific calculation based upon the contract reimbursement rates for those, and then maybe rightly use the total amount bill for the other since there was no proof of what the contract rate was. If the court had done that, that would have at least brought down the range.
Well, what counsel argued at sentencing was that loss should be less than $9.5 million. Rather than the $19 million. And the figures as to what was paid were in the record from all of the government's sheets from their accountant showing what was billed and what was paid.
You agree in the legal posture that this presents, the burden is going to be on the defendant to prove it's something other than the billed amount?
Yes.
And when you say the evidence is in the record, are you referring to Exhibit 48, the billing service report?
Excuse me, am I referring to?
Exhibit 48, the billing services report.
That is one place, but no, that was a defense. The government also had it's Exhibit 239.1 through 39 that went through each procedure, the amount billed, the amount paid, whether there was any service. So all of that information was in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.